Hey, it's Michael back for another LEGO Masters postseason deep dive on my podcast, Talk Bricks Masters. Today, I was lucky enough to get to sit down with Poppy and Ben to break down their time on the show. And thanks for all your patience, as it's just been a little bit tough tracking down these LEGO Masters celebrities. But all joking aside, I'm having so much fun with these deep dives, so here's your next one with Poppy and Ben. Well, we're back for another postseason deep dive. Somehow I just can't get enough of these season four stories. And of course, I had to bring back one of your favorite teams from season four, making their deep dive debut. Welcome back, Poppy and Ben. Say hello to everyone on the podcast.
Hey, everyone.
Hi, everybody. It's Poppy. Hi, Michael.
Oh, hello. We are so excited to have the two of you. You know, this was that, you know, grandpa grandson duo that I feel like, you know, was grandparent grandson goals. You know, I think like, you know, if only I could have built Lego with my grandparents, I think it would have been epic. we've just been so excited and looking forward to this interview. But what we typically do on these deep dives is we like to start a little bit before the show and just understand how you got into Lego and sort of like what was your Lego origin story, as I like to call it? And I'm guessing maybe, Ben, it starts with you, but, you know, how did you get into the hobby and sort of what took it up a notch that made you sort of at that next level that you might apply for a show or be on a show like this?
Yeah. Well, in the very beginning, I think it was Poppy who got me my first Lego set when I was in like elementary school still, around 7 years old. And I don't think he saw the kind of butterfly effect that would have eventually, you know, leading to us being on TV. But that got me started and just kind of continued throughout my life. You know, not only did it lead to Lego Masters, but it also got me into architecture, which I'm currently studying. I'm at school right now and Poppy's back at home in Richmond. But eventually, I think the two of us got into it together. We've developed kind of a teamwork dynamic through some other things because, you know, Poppy's a real estate developer. He's invested in like home improvement projects that we've worked on. And of course, the kind of obvious thing is Poppy's 1929 Ford Model A that he's been restoring since he was 15 years old. Since, you know, I was young enough to be able to pick up a wrench, I've been going under it and into all the places that he can't reach anymore and helping out with that.
Yes. And you mentioned that, you know, right there in the first episode, that was sort of our introduction to you. So, you know, Poppy, like, talk to us about just kind of all of that, like, you know, working on cars and all that stuff.
Yeah. Well, first of all, you know, prior to the show, my kind of limited Lego was just watching Ben and, you know, occasionally pitching in, but so I had, you know, I had a lot to learn, but, you know, Ben and I, well, I think, you know, one of our crowning achievements was we had this, I think it's called Pine Box. Is that what it is, Ben? The Pine Box Derby?
Pinewood or Pine Box.
Yeah. Pinewood, Pine Box. And so, you know, it's like balsa wood and it's a certain size and not real big. And so Ben was in Cub Scouts. I guess it was Cub Scouts.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Ben and his dad kind of designed the car. And then I started reading up about secrets of speed and, you know, how to get a lot of speed out of the car and, you know, bought some things to hone axles and there's a weight limit. I think it's like 5 grams. And we figured out exactly, you know, how to mount the weight under the axle, the rear axle. And but we'd never participated in anything like this. So, you know, we win the first heat and then we win the second heat. And you know, there's like 30 cars. And we just, our car, Ben named it the Blood Sucking Stallion.
I was going to say, I think maybe the biggest indicator that we were meant for a TV show was our flair with the name there, the Blood Sucking Stallion. Yeah. All these decals and stickers
on it. But the car was amazing because none of the car, like the second they lifted the gate, the car like went back on its, like, maybe opposite.
It's like rearing like a horse.
It lifted up on the rear end. And it just, and that was the key because there was no friction in the front. And it just like took off and it just, we won everything. Matter of fact, I think there was like one heat that they said we didn't win. And I swear we won it by so far, they didn't even like realize it. And then we had a runoff
on the track and beat all the other cars again.
Yeah. And then then we had to go back and run that and we won again. So he won this giant trophy. And that was kind of our first, you know, real success story. Yeah. What was that, Ben?
Two trophies.
Yeah. Oh, two trophies.
Not that that's, you know, the most important thing.
But I was just in chills because it's like, I never expected this car to perform like that. It's just, it was amazing. So that was sort of our first, you know, foray together.
Yeah. I mean, that's when the partnership was born, which, you know, you could argue is sometimes even more important than the Lego building on these competitions, is being able to work together well. And it seems like that was definitely something you did. But you mentioned, Poppy, you had a lot to learn in the Lego world. And so talk to us about what you did to prepare for the show. You know, obviously, that's a big piece of things.
Well, I worked my butt off. I mean, I really, you know, every night. Even on the show, you know, I worked, I studied, built things, and then just being among all the best builders, I absorbed so much and everybody was so sharing. But what I really brought to the table was, because of my experience with the cars, I was able to do the movements and so I really learned. So that was sort of my main contribution on the show, because, you know, Ben would say, you know, we need an oscillating, or we need reciprocating, or a transaxle. And I learned how to build all those machines and to gear it up. And then, you know, I had some help from the other cast members too, and learning how to stack some gears, you know, with Lego. And so that was kind of my big contribution. And then I learned quickly how to, just, you know, Ben did the design. And so I learned how to build walls and the mathematical ratio. So, you know, I was able to do some of the nuts and bolts. And then Ben could concentrate on, you know, all the beautiful design and, you know, that sort of thing.
A pretty big part of like the teamwork training we did was working on coming up with like a sort of style and like storytelling guide, like these themes that we could kind of fall back on and in any challenge, or at least try and, you know, incorporate into any challenge. And that kind of overarching theme of bridging the generations and finding these things that we were both interested in, and putting that into some of the builds that we practiced with, because we did some, you know, team builds before we went on the show, trying to put ourselves under pressure and setting time limits and stuff.
Yeah. And sure. we never had disagreements. You know, for me, it was, to be honest, it was a little difficult because, you know, I was always showing Ben how to do things. He's way surpassed me in the A school. So, you know, he was definitely the team leader, and that worked out fine, because other teams clash sometimes without giving names, or like two strong builders, but they had, you know, different approaches. So, you know, we came from it from a, we really were a very good team, and, you know, I knew my role, and, you know, Ben really took the lead, but we
tried not to be too tyrannical.
Yeah, it was pretty tyrannical.
I said I tried.
I know. It was hard. No, but I mean, but that was the secret. So we didn't waste a lot of time, you know, quibbling or, you know, that sort of thing. We knew, like, you know, like a first build, the boat, we knew in 5 minutes what we were doing, and other members, you know, they, in 5 hours, they didn't know.
Listen, if you want to drop the names, we're here for the tea. No, I'm just kidding. But that's not the spirit of the show. That's certainly not the spirit of this podcast, but you know, one thing we sort of glossed over, though, was how did you get involved with the casting process? Sometimes I know they reach out to you, sometimes people apply. So, you know, what was your story in just, you know, getting cast on the show?
So it was, they have like this army of social media casting producers who go out on Instagram and yeah. I assume some other apps as well. But that was how we were contacted. It actually wasn't the first time. I think it was the third time maybe that they reached out to me. And the first two times I was in high school and was able to make it a little of the way through the process before, you know, they stopped and said that they don't accept minors, which seemed a little strange for a Lego show at the time. Like, I had very little concept of why they wouldn't do that. But then, having been on the show and
understand why.
Yeah, been put through some of the stress and like intensity of that environment. It's a lot of fun, but it's
intense.
I can see why they don't accept minors, but it was, through Instagram.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, and oftentimes the under 18 of it all is really just about like the production rules. Like I know child actors, like they can only be on set for a certain amount of time and those sort of things.
Yeah.
So I have to imagine that applies here as well. But listen, you made it and, you know, you brought this great teamwork to the show. So let's jump into it. Let's talk about episode one. This is our Brick Lake challenge. Poppy, you already alluded to it, but this is the challenge where you made a boat, but it's also your first challenge on the show. And it was really your first kind of like foray into this, you know, weird TV version of building. So what was it like in that first episode, really stepping onto set, getting to experience all that for the first time and then hitting the ground running?
Well, I'll start off. Well, first of all, Ben did something really brilliant at the beginning and he went to the pit first. And I, believe me, 74 years old, I struggled. I eventually learned where, you know, a lot of the pieces were and how to navigate it and organize it. But Ben, you know, spent about 10 minutes purveying the pit. And so we sort of had one leg up right there because, you know, he knew where a lot of the, you know, with the plates and the bricks and the axles and motors. And so that was really a big help. But also,
I was kind of just following Christopher's lead there because he was going and snooping even like before the director yelled action for the first time. I think he'd already had the whole thing memorized. So I was a few steps behind him.
Yeah, and Christopher, by the way, he helped me a lot with parts, and he was very magnanimous even during the show hours. But we actually off camera during lunch, we did this big visualization thing, and I would shut my eyes and I would say, okay, you know, this part's over here, and this technical piece, you know, 10 studs long is, you know, in this bin. And we really, because he had it all memorized.
Wow.
You
know, he recreated the whole set in his like mind palace.
He had it all. So I just shut my eyes and I was just visualizing it. But it really helped a lot, you know?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I haven't heard anything about this. So yeah, it's definitely one of those things that people do talk about, how in the first challenge, part of the learning curve is really just learning the brick pit. But I think to your point, like doing little drills to remember where things are in your off time probably only helps you learn it faster.
Yeah.
But you mentioned earlier that you came to the idea really quickly for this one. This was the US Fusion. And, you know, you wanted to show how Lego can bridge the generations. So you wanted to kind of bring this elaborate reactor and have spinning and then powering this old fashioned steamboat. So, but talk to us about just how you arrived at that idea. Cause that, you know, a nuclear steamboat doesn't pop into my mind instantly. So I'd love to get into your brains.
Didn't pop
about how
into
you came
Jamie
up
and Amy's mind either, yeah. Which I have a little bit of, you know, whatever. But, well, I think I came up with the idea of the steamboat, you know, cause it was old fashioned. And then Ben said, yeah, but we're going to power it with a nuclear reactor. And then, you know, Ben came up with the design of the boat and I came up with the design of the functions. And we soon came together that the wheel was just going to be an illusion because, you know, the boat wasn't going to go in the water. We came to that conclusion. And then we kind of used our just our knowledge of engineering, just building things to know that how to balance the boat. And they didn't, you know, they didn't show our boat enough because that boat performed so well. It was like the blood sucking style. It was low in the back in the water. Propeller
so
was
thankfully
spinning.
It didn't like rear and tip over.
Yeah, yeah. It didn't tip over. And I wish they had shown a little bit more of our boat, you know, maneuvering, but you know, we did well on that first challenge. And Ben came up with some just great ideas railings and the beautiful design.
Well, another part of our training process was like going through other seasons and kind of looking to see what stood out. And you want these builds that are, you know, iconic, but that have these little details that you can latch on to. Like it's a recognizable thing with some kind of twist on it. So, you know, the riverboat gave us that base of something recognizable. And then you want to start like throwing off the symmetry and adding some fun colors. And that's where some of the like nuclear elements come in, because you can have these, you know, really vibrant like yellow cranes or These kind of shiny, like translucent pieces on the outside of this reactor, which really shouldn't be as exposed as it is. I think as Amy very logically pointed out a little later, but for the sake of spectacle, it's a little more fun.
Yeah.
You know, some of the transparent studs on the outside as it was rotating, it almost looked like a disco ball, which kind of added to our party theme. Finding things that, you know, you see a full picture and then everything else starts to pop out after that. So it's not busy, but it is, you know, complex and kind of dense. And that's kind of an architecture principle too that's behind that, but also studying a lot of stuff from other seasons.
And then, you know, at lunch, I YouTube, you know, how to build certain type of sphere real fast and with the motor in it. I had to memorize it. You know, Ben made me like, you know, go through it 5 times. And I go, okay, I got it. And I was able to build it on the set. So, and then you want to know a little behind the scene thing. So it was either Amy or Jamie. And they said something about, well, how do you know this is, you know, a nuclear reactor? And I just wanted to say, doesn't everybody know what a nuclear reactor looks like on a steamboat? But it was like our first, like, you know, it was our first episode and I was just afraid to say it. Now, you know, I got to know them so well. I wish I'd said it, but you know, that was their criticism. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw a comment somewhere, and this was early on before I realized that, you know, you probably shouldn't read that many comments, but a suggestion to have added, like, you know, the yellow nuclear symbol that has the circle. Yeah. The triangles extending out, and that would have completed the story. And
that's a great idea.
That's the little thing that like keeps me up at night. Is if we had only
we didn't think about it. You know, listen, you're under so much pressure. That would have been a great idea. Sure, yeah, that would have been good. Yeah.
Well, I guess at the same time, it didn't send you home, so you know you don't have to be too regretful.
Yeah.
No. But yes, I mean, this was definitely like I think like a really underrated build. I mean, to your point, there was those multiple levels and you had all the different fences. There was pops of color within that white design with like the string lights. There was, you know, I really did like sort of the wheel illusion and how you built down towards the pontoons where even though it wouldn't go into the water, that we had a little bit of that detail. And yeah, I mean, even at the very back, it looked like there was like a stage with speakers, like it was a concert. So like even there was like, even if you weren't looking at it from the front. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the other thing that was a little bit challenging, there were dimensions. You could only go so wide and so high. And
that's what made our decision to not complete the full kind of power wheel. It's because we had, I think, like less than half an inch to extend off the side of the boat. The first idea was to power the reactor in the middle as well as have the wheel spin, you know, not to actually push the boat or anything, but just as an aesthetic detail. But we abandoned that pretty quickly because it just would have been too flimsy. And
never would have worked.
Never would have worked. So I think it worked out better not moving because it
absolutely
a stronger image. And
yeah,
I think it looked pretty clever once it actually like got in the water and the water rose to about the right level that we wanted it to, which we had no assurance that it would. So thankfully that all worked out.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, you do the best with what you've got and what you know at the time, but it does float. It was super successful. Obviously Amy, you know, did get down on you about sort of that nuclear iconography, if you will, but I don't know. I think that's being a little nitpicky, but
that's what I thought.
but you have a strong showing here in the first challenge. And then we go into sort of like a complete left turn from building boats, which is cats. And so this was the Catropolis episode. They bring out all these kittens. And, you know, this is something, you know, we saw with dogs in the previous season, but we'd never seen this unique twist on a challenge. So the cats come running out. You know, what's your reaction to seeing all these animals on set as if you weren't nervous enough for the challenge?
I think we started sneezing first.
Well,
that was the first reaction.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think, you know, the cats will do that to a lot of people, but, you know, but this one here, you had Tiger, and Tiger was your kitten. Tiger loves dancing and painting with his paws. And your, you know, ultimate build was this Tiger's studio. Talk to us about how you translated sort of this inspiration into your final design. You know, did this one come as easily as the last one?
Well, actually, again, I came up with the paint can idea. I mean, because he likes to paint, and I'm not exactly, you know, how we hit on that. And then Ben came up, you don't know, but that whole can was cantilevered underneath. And I mean, it was really, I don't know if that's ever been done with Lego before. Ben came and we kind of struggled. I guess we did pivot sort of once on the size of it, Ben, because it was getting
well, I think originally we wanted, because they didn't show a lot of the backside, thankfully, but we wanted to have it finished from both sides and have like some stuff on the exterior so you could turn it around, which I don't think they did for anybody's builds. But at one point, thankfully they didn't show this either, but we were kind of struggling to get the wall standing up because it was all snap built. So it's all, you know, in the wrong orientation and it's curving, which is also kind of compromises the integrity until you get the whole thing built. So you basically have to hold it all in place until everything is studded in or connected and stuff. Yeah, they had the cameras very, very close on us for most of that episode because we were sweating and
they were worried.
Our hands through our hair. We they learned pretty quickly to send the cameras in once we started like chanting "Oy vey, oy vey, oy vey," and they didn't know what that meant at first. They had to ask us about it, and then it's like, you know, oh crap, kind of a replacement for that. So it was lots of "Oy vey." The first half of that episode.
Well, I'll just say Ben came up with this, you know, the paint dripping down the side and for two colorblind, I passed on my colorblind to Ben.
Well, the ironic thing is it skips a generation. So my mom, who's Poppy's daughter, doesn't have it,
it's not a woman. It's a male. It's an X Y chromosome. Anyhow, I think not. So I passed it to Ben. But he came up with this beautiful dripping paint. And then I don't know if I'm allowed to say the name of it. Is it Mondrian, the modern ones? Yeah, that he did the floor. And then, you know, it's funny.
It was kind of the same formula of like something big that you instantly recognize and then the smaller details to kind of pull you in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of those details, Ben, like, is there certain elements from this build that you feel like we didn't get to see on camera or you're especially proud of?
I think so. We had the dance floor, the Mondrian inspired dance floor, and we spent, you know, probably the first 3 hours figuring out how to do these lights that kind of moved on the inside. And in hindsight, you know, it was our second challenge and kind of our second time using some of these like little machines that they have. But it was a little over-engineered and didn't always work. But, you know, if you looked at it closely, you could see the little lights kind of moving
and
forth under the dance floor. And it might not have even been on like when they.
I don't think it was. I think it was working. And then when they reviewed it, it may have gone off. But then
which is always how it worked. You know,
I since learned how to put a little more torque on some of those machines. I think that may have been part of it. But, you know, you learn to do these machines. And then in the build, you have to change the ratio, you know, to fit a certain size. So you're kind of winging it a lot. So
sure. Yes. I mean, I think this one was a really fun one, like to your point, all the colors and you really had like such rich like storytelling and all your details, like with all the different paint tubes and the, you know, all that sort of stuff. I think this was a really fun one. And, you know, it also, you know, I think was a really like strong feedback, at least that we got to see on the show, you know, Amy saying, you know, we're really getting a chance to see you two really shine as builders. And I love seeing this creative side of you come out today. I mean, you know, kind of you got the nitpicky feedback from Amy in episode one. Now you're sort of heating up as we go into episode two. You know, how did it feel, you know, getting this sort of feedback?
No, it was great. And, you know, Ben came up like the little cans. They looked like they were round, but they were really, you know, hexagon. He came up with that idea. And then I was able to get, we had the mouse swinging back and forth and I was able to get that to reciprocate. And, the feedback was great. I just kind of wish they had talked more about what it took to build the wall. So they didn't get into that much, but that was the challenge.
The feedback is always kind of surprising because you never know what they're going to say. Because you don't have like a chance to like reflect or process anything that you've built until you know the hands up bricks down command is yelled at the end of the challenge and you stand back and it's literally the first time like you see the build completed and you don't know what to think of it yet. So
almost completed. We missed the square. We put it on the table and go, oh, S-H.
Oh, I know. That's the one little detail that
we missed one little square.
in the dripping paint, there's like, you know, a pixel missing in it because it's so square and like orthogonal, it stands out so much more. But not that there aren't other things I would want to fix about this one either. But
10 hours or 12 hours.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Nice to get some good feedback. They, for every build, to kind of like conceal what the result of the challenge is going to be, each, you know, Amy and Jamie each give an equal amount of positive and negative feedback for every build. So you're standing there and you get the critique and you get, you know, the praise, and you don't really know, like you react to each in turn. You smile when you get the feedback, and you nod your head defensively when you get criticism. So yeah, nice to get any kind of positive feedback.
Well,
yeah.
The other thing that we quickly surmise, probably from watching some of the other groups, is that when they give you that feedback, I mean, if you disagree, doesn't matter. You really have to follow what they're telling you. So for anybody planning to go on the show, it's great to be real creative and kind of do your thing. But if Amy and Jamie tell you, you know, something, yeah, just follow it.
This is, yes.
They're the judges.
Something that I had a little advantage on, because you learn all this stuff in architecture school, because architecture school works kind of uncannily similar to the structure of Lego Masters, where, you know, your professor gives you an assignment, you have an unreasonable amount of time to complete it. And then at the end, you know, you get your evaluations from your professor versus Will Arnett. But you learn pretty quickly that if you mention anything to your professor, like any goals for your project pretty early on, and you don't have it at the end, it's going to screw you over, and you're going to be humiliated in front of everyone as you're presenting your project. So frankly, it's a little bit more pressure in architecture school than it was on the show.
I don't know about that.
oh, yeah, I know about that, because your professors don't have a family-friendly, you know, TV show to adhere to, so they can say whatever they want. I heard one of my professors describe someone's project the other day as a gyroscope of hell. So compared to, you know, most of the stuff that Will and Jamie and Amy can say, it's pretty tame.
I can only imagine Amy saying that in her Scottish accent, you know, gyroscope of hell.
It sounds better. It sounds more appropriate in the Scottish accent, I'll say that.
Yeah, maybe. But another strong showing here from the two of you. And, you know, we move on then to the volcanic brick eruptions challenge, you know, which again is like another very different you know, challenge here. You know, I feel like they keep zigging and zagging and giving you lots of new things to play with and have to deal with, I should say. And for this one, yours was the City of the Scorpion Worshippers, and your environment was the desert. And they had everyone run at the top of the challenge to try to grab one of these, you know, four different environments. And I'm curious, you know, was this desert, you know, biome environment, was that the one you were going for? Was that just the one that was left over? You know, talk to us about that.
I think Ben grabbed that one.
Yeah,
I was too slow. I never ran. Whenever there was some, whether it was the cat or whatever, Ben would be the first to take off. So I think Ben wanted the desert, didn't you, Ben?
It might have actually been the second one that I grabbed. Yeah. And according to the rules of the show, the first one you grab is the one you're stuck with. I think thankfully nobody saw me grab.
Don't tell them that.
One first. they'll rescind our elimination. Oh no, we have to go back on the show and compete again. The running thing always felt a little kind of arbitrary and unfair, because it was like Robert and I, or Chris and I, running against, like, I don't know, the rest of the cast. And I think maybe the two of us were just a little bit more prepared to, like, you know, get tackled than maybe poor little Melanie would have been. But we got the desert one, which I think was my second choice, because I think I grabbed the jungle first. But then just kind of thinking about, like, the colors that we had available, you know, the stuff that they have, you know, an abundance of in the brick pit, that was always the first consideration, was what colors can we use. And I think that led to the desert decision.
Yeah,
gotcha.
And then I was totally confused, because I couldn't understand how you could have now it makes more sense. You can have a desert island, but they were still surrounded by water. So yeah, it took me a while to figure out, okay, you know, it is an island still, but it's a desert island.
Yeah. I mean, listen, anything's possible in Lego. That's the fun part. Yeah,
that's
well, this city of scorpion worshippers was a really interesting concept. You know, there was this opulent, rich society mining the land for the resources. They dug too deep and they've awoken the scorpion god. So like you really had like a rich lore, you know, behind this story. So how did you come up with this concept?
That was totally Ben's.
Yeah, well, this is the stage in the competition where you've got a few too many nights on like 3 hours of sleep. So it unleashes a little bit more of your creativity in some good ways, some kind of startling ways. But yeah, I wanted to do something that I think in the end product looks kind of Egyptian, but I wanted to do something that wouldn't be like kind of, you know, contained in the ancient and Egyptian iconography, because we wanted to do something colorful with some of these like finer architectural details. And, you know, if you see an ancient Egyptian ruin, at least these days, they're kind of, you know, dull and worn.
They've been through it.
Yeah, it's not their fault. I mean, that's not what they look like originally. A lot of that's thanks to Napoleon. But anyhow. What were we talking about? What was the question?
How did you come up with your concept?
Sidetracked on Napoleon.
Yeah. wasn't that a story, Ben? Wasn't there?
I think we just came up with a story. Frankly, I don't really know how it happened.
Maybe you were like subtly, you know, inspired by The Rock's portrayal as the Scorpion King in the Mummy franchise.
Yeah, sure, we can say that.
Yeah. Well, this one was all about, you know, guiding the lava, you know, which is another like unknown element, you know, to your point earlier about not getting to test the boat. You know, you certainly didn't get to do some dry runs of the lava. But, you know, I think your team was probably maybe uniquely prepared for this, you know, with your understanding of fluid dynamics and the Bernoulli principle, as we learned about. You know, Poppy, you said, if you have a fluid and you narrow the channel, it goes faster. It's the same principle of a carburetor. So, I mean, Poppy, it sounds like you were the mechanism guy, but, you know, when you got lava as a challenge, I'm guessing it didn't faze you. I feel like you were ready for this.
Well, first of all, it's true. We had no idea the viscosity of the lava. And we didn't even really, I mean, it was kind of like, into the middle of the challenge, we realized they're going to pump it up, and then, you know, gravity was going to bring it down. So, you know, Ben and I, the Model A is a gravity feed fuel system. The tank actually sits. Sounds kind of dangerous, but you know, the tank is on top of the firewall, which is right in front of you, like right in front of the windshield. And then there's no fuel pump. So it flows down, and then you have this updraft. It's called a Zenith carburetor. And it works totally by the Bernoulli principle. So we sort of just applied some of those ideas and kind of hoped it would work. And I think at the at the point, you know, we had the Scorpion and the channel, and then we had the Monarch. And somehow when it came down, it just washed the Monarch away. And it just worked, you know. We had no clue. When that was sort of like when we won the pine box, watching that Monarch float into the sea was like, again, I got the chills. Like I couldn't believe it actually worked. but Ben really engineered that whole thing, to be honest. I just kind of came up with a Bernoulli principle idea. And I don't even know whether it was the exact application, but it worked.
it made you sound really smart on TV.
It made it sound good, yeah.
Which is all that matters. But like I said, I think you had a lot of fun with this story. You had like quite a presentation that we saw in the judging. You know, you said, in the vastness of the desert sands thrives the city of scorpion worshippers. This opulent city lies in the shadow of a great volcano. The worshippers credit their good fortune to a mystical scorpion god. But our scorpion worshippers have delved a little too greedily and awoke this legendary scorpion god. And then now they must endure its wrath. And we hear you wail, Poppy. You know, you give this very expressive wail. And I learned a new word, as you said. So we hope the lava overflows out of that caldera. I'd never heard that word before. Runs down the central avenue of our city where our tyrannical patrician, another great vocabulary word, is having a parade and wipes away all of that wealth into the ocean. So clearly you like got really into the story. You know, when you're preparing for these presentations, you know, did you rehearse this, you know, grandiose story?
100 times. We walk around eating lunch in one hand, and you know, and Christopher is so funny because he's doing his, you know, his evil impersonation. He's really the nicest guy in the world, and he's going in one direction. I'm going counterclockwise, and we're just trying to memorize the whole thing, and so.
Well, it pays off. And we appreciate the commitment more than anything. You know, like, I think, you know, the more fun you're having on the show, I think the more fun we have watching you. But I think that ultimately, not only did this build, you know, ultimately work really well, but there were some really stunning details. You know, I think like there was a lot of things that could have been built more simply, but you did that little extra twist. Like, you know, the thing that always stands out to me is the big walls around the, you know, kind of perimeter, how they're all angled up slightly. Yeah. And I felt like that's that one little detail where you could have built them straight and it would have been simpler. But by adding that slight angle, it just adds like that elegance, you know, to the city that you were going for. But, you know, was there anything else, you know, from this, you know, the build that really stood out to you or you're especially proud of here?
The like rock work on that scale is not something that I'd done before. Just, you know, you have to have access to so many pieces, which is sort of the main barrier. But I was kind of really surprised with how well that turned out. I think, you know, some of the forest perspective of like having the city in front and then the volcano behind, like really gave it that imposing presence and scattering a couple other colors in there to give it some nice like highlights and shadows. That was really cool. We also had, and I think almost everybody had this, but Sam was going around with his little penguins that he had for his Arctic island and hiding them on people's builds. So if you look really closely, and I think I have it in a couple of screenshots, you can see one of Sam's poor little penguins, right, migratory penguins who got a little too far away from home. And it's now probably regretting it.
Oh, that's awesome. And I mean, you had really like all these great minifigure stories throughout. You know, they're running from the scorpions, there's stacks of gold, there's the throne, and there's even like a scene tucked into the back of the volcano where like, luckily the show showed it to us, but you know, to your point earlier, they don't always show the back. You know, did you have a ton of fun, you know, kind of building all that into the scene?
That was actually a little nerve wracking because we thought it might be like the cat house, and then we realized we had to be around circle on the back. So we had I wouldn't say pivot, we had to, you know, put some finishing touches on the back.
Yeah. I think the scene in the back was kind of a happy accident that you get with some of the restraints on the show. Cause like Poppy mentioned, we were planning originally to have it like a stage set where it's hollow in the background. And it was maybe halfway through the challenge that we realized we would have to build it up. And I don't know if the idea was that it would take a little less time if we didn't fill everything in and like left some caverns open, but then you pour a bunch of time into doing all the details and the minifig stories. But I think it worked out in our favor in the end to have, you know, some of those smaller little scenes.
Yes. Well, this definitely worked out in your favor because this was, of course, your win. You won this challenge. And, you know, Jamie said this was your best build yet. Your legendary story was clear and you really had an amazing control of that lava flow to bring your model to life. So obviously, like I said, you've sort of been heating up this whole time. You know, had a nice build in episode one, even stronger in episode two. And now you're here with a win on the show. What did it feel like to like be called up in the top two and ultimately get your win?
It was amazing. It just like, whoa, we won this. And, I don't even think we expressed it enough on the show. It was like kind of like shock.
Yeah, I think kind of shock was the first reaction. It's like a much, it's hard to describe because the first thing you want to do is like celebrate with your teammate. And that's not like always the biggest reaction. You know, Poppy and I think we gave each other a hug and that was like,
yeah,
that was our celebration in the moment. And it doesn't look huge on TV, but you know, it was really special to both of us.
Yeah. Yeah. You guys should have practiced like a coordinated backflip, so that you could have been ready. Yeah.
Of course, we had no idea we would win.
Yeah. But that was really like probably just really gratifying. But obviously, to your point, you finish one challenge, even when you get the win, you're immediately on to the next challenge. So I'm curious, you know, how did you take, you know, sort of like what was your mental state going from a win, knowing that you'd be challenged again? You know, did you let it get to your head, or you were like, forget that win, we're on to the next challenge?
It was just like a basketball tournament. That's history. You got to go on to the next one. So didn't even, I don't think it, I don't think it ever, the win ever entered our minds during the fourth episode. Maybe. I mean, we knew it won, but I mean, it just, you can't concentrate on it at all. Just, you're on to the next.
If anything, I think it puts you at kind of a disadvantage, unless you win some kind of
advantage
on the show. If you didn't, then all it really does is put a target on your back for critique in the next episode.
Yeah.
So, it was something we wanted to do during our season, and I'm glad that we won an episode. But it's a little more pressure. We were good at staying in the moment, I think, and not really letting it bother us.
Yes. Yeah. I know it's hard because like now when the judges know what you're really capable, they expect that or more. So I think maybe if you're being strategic, you know, stay out of the bottom two and just like get the slow build throughout the season so that they only expect just a little more of you each time. Kidding.
that was really our strategy. And that's what we told the other cast members, just kind of stay under the radar and just live to fight another day.
Yeah. I know it's tough. And I always talk about it with the podcast and really with a lot of the reality shows I watch. But like, I always say like, nobody won the season, on episode three, but people lost the season on episode three, So I think like, it's one of those things where I think you're always better trying to stay in the middle of the pack if you can help it. It's tempting to show off and really give it your all and all that. So, I don't know if I would hold back per se if I was in the moment, but at least, Monday morning quarterback, I can say that. But we move on then to episode four. This is the Build It By Ear Challenge. And of course, you run and you have to collect one of these, buzzer buttons to, produce a sound. Yours was rawr. And, I'm curious, obviously nobody knew what any of these sounds would ultimately sound like, but was that, did rawr stand out to you for some reason when you were running to get it?
Yeah, because we were thinking of like maybe a hot rod, or we thought it was going to be like a, Harley or hot rod or something.
An engine.
Yeah. And then when we heard our roar, it sounded more like a dinosaur or something. We go, uh-oh, pivot or, something else. So
yes. Well, this one was definitely like, I think, another ambitious story. Maybe you were like on the high of your story from the previous episode, but ultimately this turned into Hydra Attack, a battle between two monsters. You had jets, a squadron of jets above the chaos. It was sort of like Godzilla coming out of the water and then this big Hydra, in the city. So this was really like a major kaiju battle that we are seeing here. So talk to us, how did you get to this concept after hearing that sound?
A kind of fun thing about doing stuff on Lego Masters is you don't have to adhere to a certain scale. Not everything has to be minifig scale. Sometimes you go larger, sometimes you go smaller. So there's a lot of like power that you get from shrinking those jets down really small, and that sets the scale of these big monsters. So we wanted to do something that would have some spectacle, and we pivoted pretty quickly after hearing the sound for the first time and deciding that this wasn't the one, that we were going to pander to the Model A community. And so I think that's what led us to the big monster.
Well, as soon as we heard the sound, I mean, I said, it sounds like a dinosaur, we agreed it was, it was a monster. So he had to do something monstrous.
For sure.
Monstrosity.
Well, and this one here, had another great story. Poppy, you say, extra, read all about it. A three-headed Hydra takes control of a local chemical plant. The super monster is a beast more friendly to the plight of humanity and has risen from the depths to challenge the Hydra. And this was really like just so much, going on. There's lots of action. So talk to us about all the elements of this build and the story that you're trying to tell, with all your details.
I think this is the build that we really realized that you only want to show the stuff that you have to capture like this moment of the story. And that goes for, your scenery, the kind of focus of your action and the movement too. So, in another world, maybe we built both of these monsters, and I don't think it would have been like, both of these monsters at full scale. And I don't think it would have been as effective because there's a little bit more mystery with our super monster rising out of the water and facing the Hydra, who's already in this like attack position. And also, is a time saver because it gives us more time to focus on really fleshing out our Hydra. And then the movement too was really meant to kind of help convey our story, because the first thing that you think of when you're faced with this build is, oh, we have to make one of the monsters move. There has to be some kind of like head bobbing with the Hydra or maybe our super monster. I'm hesitating to say the other name. Yeah. That is a little less fair use friendly. But your first instinct is to make one of them move. But these builds at this scale get heavy so quickly, and the engineering required to do that kind of movement would just be, take days, not hours. So we came up with the idea, and it wasn't our first idea, it took some pivoting, but to show the kind of intensity of the roar, really emphasizing the sound that we were given by showing the destruction that it was causing. So we have the shipping containers that are getting kind of blown out of the way by the sound wave. We also depict the sound wave with those transparent pieces that are coming out of the central monster's head. It's also like a nice kind of framing device too.
Well, at first we were going to emphasize the super monster, and I think the planes were going to circle around, around the super monster. But then Jamie and Amy came over and they said, you really need to like pull in, your monster, your Hydra. So we had to pivot a little bit, and then we had the ship. So the whole idea of the containers was to focus in on the Hydra. And then we let the super monster be illusionary, just coming out. And then we put the planes in a small scale circling above the Hydra, and it kind of pulled the whole build together.
Yeah. Well, and Jamie always talks about like creating an icon, having a place for your eyes to land on. And I think to your point earlier, Ben, like having two monsters, now there's two places for your eyes to land on versus this central image of the Hydra probably is even a stronger still. Right. From the movie or whatever that this was. But there was also a lot of great details in the backdrop. You had the smokestacks. There was this like chemical plant above the water, the yellow railings all around. And then I did notice that there was a yellow sphere on the right, which reminded me of your nuclear, piece and your boat. Was that meant to be homage, or am I reading into it?
Well, it was, because that was one of the few things I was getting pretty good at, even from our early was building spheres. So, we had to incorporate it into another one somewhere. So that was part of it.
Well, it definitely added to the build. And I like to think, your lineage of all these builds, but this one was a really fun one. And the judges like definitely really liked how you represented, to your point, the sound with the transparent elements. And this one was a fun one. Was there anything else like about this build or this episode that you wanted us to know about?
Well, again, I don't know. I kind of felt there was another one where I thought maybe it was the theme. I just thought we had so much detail. I know that Sam built this, huge clock, and it was complicated, a lot of engineering, but I don't know. I thought maybe we could have taken second place or something. I forget who took second on that one, but anyway, I like our
film. You were a contender for sure. I think it was a strong showing. And second was Lewis and Alex this time around. And their monkey build was a great one. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a great one. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're glad. And we're glad they got in there too.
For sure. For sure. Well, we'll talk a little bit about Lewis and Alex, because you actually worked with the two of them in the next episode, which was the Cirque du Soleil episode. And, as a reminder, there was two teams of that had each had four teams on them. You were part of Team Soleil, and Team Soleil was obviously you and Ben, Poppy and Ben. It was Nina and Sam, Christopher and Robert, and Lewis and Alex. And, this one was definitely like an unbelievable team. But talk to us about what it was like to collaborate. You've been working, kind of as competitors in your own little islands. What was it like to finally come together and have to like make plans together, build together? What was that all like from your perspective?
Well, I think you have to understand the whole group dynamic, because, Alex was sort of in the same position as me, where Lewis was, the more experienced builder, and Alex and I would, gripe about, but also, but every night we had, almost every night, like Emily had a seminar on design, and we became very close friends. As a matter of fact, Lewis, we met Lewis in D.C. Ben and I met him. We spent a day or after the show.
Sure.
Then Alex came up to Williamsburg and we met. So we became very close with Lewis and Alex, and we were really close with everybody on the almost the whole cast. So We just decided we were really going to, you know, approach it from a team approach. And I don't think the other side, you know, did that as much as we did. And everybody was extremely unselfish with their time. And I thought we put together a very cohesive build.
Yeah.
And at that point in the challenge, most people kind of knew their like specialties at that point. Sam was good at these big like monolithic structures. So we put together the wall that unified all of our builds. I at this point had done a couple of characters in like the monsters. And so I put together our little figures that became, you know, like Sam and Nina's dancers and, well, just all of our figures.
Yeah.
And, you know, Lewis and Alex, who were had been really good with the mechanisms, they came up with that really terrific
pipe rope.
High wire. Yeah.
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 So it was cool to see everybody kind of like contribute their specialties to the group.
And at that point, I knew how to put a lot of torque because we had a lot of weight on our synchronized swimmers. So, you know, I had a lot of gearing on our motor and that worked really well. I think Ben came up with the wall, though. That was your design, wasn't it, Ben?
The circular wall out front, too, because we'd also done a lot of.
And I was getting better at reverse engineering, you know, so, you know, Ben would give me like an arm and then I could, you know, take it apart and build 10 more of them until, you know, so that was like a right arm. And then I'd give him like another one. He goes, oh, no, we need 10 arms. Oh, no, you have to do, you know, 5 right, 5 left. Start mirror imaging the reverse engineering. But yeah, but we just really came together on that project.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you know, a little later on, when Poppy had to leave for the, you know, the medical stuff, it was almost, you know, a good thing that it happened in that challenge because I had that team that I could call on to help kind of get through the last part of that build.
And just so you know, I had COVID. I got COVID. And
I got COVID.
That's what did us in.
I know.
We never lost a challenge, but they just wouldn't let us back on. And just is what, you know, they had their rules and protocol and safety, you know, so that's what happened.
Well, we'll get there for sure. But let's talk about this challenge and what you were able to build, because this was your balancing act and you did a pool for your synchronized swimmers. There was like all these oscillating, you know, different elements with the sun and the moon characters on top. And, you know, and it sounds like, you know, there was a lot of synchronized swimming, you know, with, you know, two of your daughters, Poppy, you know, right. Ben, your younger sister, having some of this experience. So talk to us about how this build came together, because, you know, when it comes to a balancing act, you could have taken this a lot of different directions. So I'm curious, you know, just how this one came together.
Well, during our practice builds, we actually built synchronized swimmers. So we had some experience doing that. And then, you know, Sadie we never would have lived it down if we didn't like put some synchronized swimmers on the show. So, you know, I think it was just kind of natural to do that.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. So, and you mentioned, you know, like the kind of the intricacies of the mechanism, because the entire platform rotated and that's like a lot of brick. Like, I think as I always like reorganize my Lego collection and you pick up enough sets at once or enough, you know, bins at once, Lego's heavy. So talk to us about how that one came together.
There was a process. Actually, Robert taught me earlier, you know, in Lego, because, you know, I know kind of how a transmission, you know, the car works, but he showed me how to stack gears. So you create a lot of torque, you know, if you put a, you know, like a small gear to a big gear, or big gear to a small gear, you create it. So I just stacked those gears, and because it was a lot of weight and it worked.
Definitely. Well, and this one was a unique challenge, obviously, with this team element, but also with the end, because, you know, for the first time ever, it was a tie. We never had that in Lego Masters history. And they throw down the banner, the circus performer, you know, saying no one is going home. You know, obviously, this was probably a crazy reaction on set. We, you know, obviously, Poppy, you weren't there in person. But Ben, what was your reaction to getting to see this?
Yeah, obviously, very nice to have a tie and have no one sent home. I guess it didn't really occur to us then. But, you know, they had the sign made, so there was a lot of danger for anybody, you know, during the episode. Yeah. But you could kind of tell maybe with some of the feedback they were that they were leading up to something like that. And they've had some similar like team challenges in the past, or at least these sponsored challenges in the past where they don't send anybody home.
Sure.
So I mean, at the very least, our team wasn't all that worried.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it was a really strong showing from Team Soleil. I mean, the way that all the builds came together, it was very impressive. But like we, you know, alluded to earlier, Poppy, you know, this was like an unceremonious, you know, goodbye to the two of you. You know, in the at the start of the next episode, they have to let us know, obviously, why we're not going to see you anymore on the show. But like we were, at least on the podcast, like really gutted. You know, I mean, you had built up so much momentum. You came off a win. You had a really strong showing in this challenge as well. So, you know, of course, I feel like everybody probably leaves the show being like, oh, if I could have done this or I could have done that. But obviously for the two of you, it's a very unique experience. So, you know, what was it like just sort of, you know, talk us through sort of like getting the news, you know, that you weren't going to be able to continue on, and just how you moved through that, because I can't imagine it was easy.
Well, there was still plenty of, well, we could have done this and we could have done that, but
sure.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely upsetting. I think everybody on production really tried to do everything they could to keep us on the show for as long as possible. But it kind of really highlighted like how nice, you know, the production was. I've heard people's experiences on other reality TV shows where everybody's kind of disconnected from like the production team and all the producers. But here, everybody was very, very close, and the environment was so kind of friendly the whole time and not very like hierarchical. Like you never felt like these producers were like looking down on you. And it did seem that they were, you know, very genuinely disappointed to have to send us home at that point in the competition. And it was almost like how upset they were that really, like, I think made me almost
sure.
more upset.
Right.
Because if they delivered it kind of, you know, coldly and, oh, we got to send you home because, you know, the rules, then it would have been, oh, there's nothing we can do about it. But they were so like empathetic the whole time that it was upsetting.
Yeah. I mean, you never want someone to go home, you know, on a bad day, let alone for something like this. You know, I think everyone would love for everyone to always put their best work out and just be eliminated because there was another team that was a little bit better. But, yeah. but, like I said, it really hurt us, you know, even at home, because we'd gotten to know you a little bit. We'd gotten to love your builds and just your dynamic, that it was hard, you know, for us to, you know, not have that sort of, you know, goodbye with you. And I know, Poppy, it sounded like people were really concerned for you because they, right. you know, they didn't explain sort of what had gone on.
Right. And first of all, it was extremely disappointing, and it was disappointing because, you know, the cast was getting narrowed. So, you know, it wasn't going to be that many more weeks on the show that, you know, I of course I'm biased, but I feel we could have made it to the last week, yeah, but we'll never know. We were just getting ready to
get out of the middle of the pack. You were just about to see what we had.
Yeah. And, you know, we had some ideas, and I think we would have, you know, in the next challenge, I think we would have, you know, would have done, you know, really well, because I think we would have chosen a lamp, tried to light it up, you know.
The race car challenge felt really suited to us.
I looked at the race car and I saw, I mean, it was just so up our alley, just to balance that car. And, you know, and although it was interesting because I think actually it was like Lewis and Alex actually picked it was interesting how the two cars you picked were so important with the pieces. But I think Ben would have kind of figured that out right away. I don't know if I would have, but but there was an element of a little bit of relief. I mean, to be honest, like my doctor made me a knee. I had a knee break. I mean, you're standing on your feet. You know, it's not just 10 hours. It's like every single day. And I guess maybe I was, you know, I mean, I felt really bad because, you know, I blame it on me that I got COVID. I mean, you know, I guess I could have got, you know, we were mostly isolated in the hotel. We went out.
Sure.
So I felt bad about that. But also I was the oldest person on the set. So maybe I was running down a little bit. I'm not sure. But it was pretty stressful, you know, emotionally, physically, even though it was such a great, wonderful experience. So, I mean, I wasn't like, oh, this is the end of the world. But, you know, like I said, we think we both felt really bad because we figured, you know, maybe 3-4 weeks left and, you know, could have survived. But
yeah. And obviously, like, we would have loved to get to see all those ideas that you you talked about sort of prepping and all the, you know, big builds that you were going to be building for us. But, you know, I think it sounds like you've got a pretty good attitude about it. But, you know, one of the things that we always get to see from the teams that go home is sort of like their final thoughts, their takeaways as they say goodbye. And I'm curious, you know, like sort of to do that role play here and to see sort of like, what are you taking away from this experience? And, you know, what can you share about like what this all meant to you?
Well, first of all, it was Ben and I being together, you know, how many grandparent, you know, grandson, you know, get to, you know, do this for 8 weeks. And then also for me, I just learned so much. I mean, I need to start like doing a little more Lego, but just, you know, for me, you know, I learned a little bit about Lego along the way.
I think the thing that I took away was that just like, I thought everybody had this kind of relationship with their, you know, their grandparents and doing this, I feel like maybe, you know, what we
learned something.
Like, yeah. A little bit more, you know, extraordinary than that. Maybe a little bit more appreciative of it.
Yeah. I love Ben. It was great. We were there, you know, it was
amazing. And you mentioned, you know, like that not everyone has that relationship with their, you know, grandpa. Like what has the feedback been? Like, who have you, you know, have you heard from other people just about like what it was, how cool it was to see you with your grandpa on TV?
Yeah. I think 99% of our fan base is people who also have poppies or who call their grandparents poppies.
Yeah. All my friends, you know, my age just say, hey, that was just incredible. You know, my Model A buddies and my other friends and my, you know, I hang out at a couple coffee shops and everybody, you know, just say, hey, that was just, I think that's really the kind of what stands out is that, you know, Ben and I, you know, did that together.
Yeah. And how special, you know, I think, you know, to even get to take the time, you know, I think sometimes we forget about that, but, you know, to be able to step away from life and have this sort of experience with someone special, you know, it's, you know, time you'd never get otherwise, but, yeah. You know, obviously it seems like you had a lot of building left in you, you know, when it came to the competition. So what is next for the two of you? You know, where are you going to put all that unrequited creative energy? You know, what's next for you?
Well, Ben needs to finish architectural school.
Yeah.
But he's designed the governor's mansion. Ben's going on and doing, you know, I'm struggling to build my Technic airship. You know, I'm going to finish that one of these days. But, you know, the governor commissioned him to design the governor's mansion and he's done.
Yeah. I recently had to get my business license in Virginia because it's been pretty busy after the show with like commissions and,
wow,
and these other things that I've been doing. The main reason I have the business license now is I've started doing these workshops in schools, mostly like elementary schools, middle schools, and with like local boys and girls clubs to connect Lego to architecture. Because one of the main issues and like kind of the current state of architecture is just that people don't consider it as a like career path until like later in high school, the first couple of years at college, at which point a lot of these kind of old fashioned, you know, institutions consider it a little late to start. But by connecting some of these, you know, architecture principles with Lego, like it just gets kids thinking about it at a younger age and might, you know, eventually make the kind of architecture pool a little bit more interesting. That, and we have the Lego factory is being built right outside Richmond. So that's brought up some cool opportunities. I'm working with a furniture company right now to put together like a pitch for the factory to see if they, you know, they could get commissioned to do the furniture and involve some little like Lego miniatures of some of their different furniture models and kind of create a style guide for their presentation, kind of based off of not just like the Lego aesthetic, but the kind of like Lego design language that they use in a lot of their parks and at like the Lego house in Denmark, you know, as a very like style. I'm also, there is a Lego exhibit coming to our local history museum And that's going to have a couple of pieces that I've done. And that'll be this October. So that's coming up soon too. Yeah, it's been very exciting, actually. I think my architecture thesis is probably going to have something to do with like play structures or, you know, something Lego adjacent. Because this is a whole tangent that I could talk about for a long time, and it's I'm doing my thesis on it probably, but, you know, COVID had a huge impact on the current generation of, you know, kids that are in school right now. And whenever I do a workshop, the teachers always have, you know, something to say about all the differences they're noticing, especially in like, collaborative skills, just that students have a harder time collaborating. It's not all negative. Like something they've all noticed is that students have like a really strong sense of personality, even earlier, which maybe makes them a little harder to teach, but it's like, it's interesting to see. So the thesis might have something to do with like how to promote collaboration in like the post pandemic, you know, kid with some kind of play structure or typology or something.
Wow. Well, listen, you may not have won $100,000, but I think you have no shortage of like amazing opportunities and chances to show your skills. So that's exciting to see. And, you know, will you be doing a lot of like the traditional Lego things, like going to conventions and other places people get to see you?
Yeah. Tim Hutchins is coming. He's going to spend a couple of days at our house in March. And we're going to go up to Fredericksburg together. And there's a convention there. And then Ben and I did a little one-day convention. And then we also met Lewis up in, you know, Dulles Airport. So
and, I think maybe we'll try and go to Chicago this year, too, because I think that's the one that all the Lego masters end up at.
Yes, yes. It's a very fun one. I've been lucky enough to host some Lego masters panels at the conventions in Chicago. Cool. So maybe I'll be back again this year. I mean, I'll definitely be there, but hopefully you'll have me again so I can get to interview you in real life, and getting to see you would be so exciting. But that, you know, brings us to the end of our little, you know, deep dive here. But I just want to say thank you so much. I mean, I think I feel so like connected to the two of you, and that we were robbed of getting to hear all of your great stories and to like get to see you thrive even more as you were already thriving on the show. But getting this little taste, I think has been, it's fed my soul a little bit in that way, where I feel like at least I got to spend a little bit more time with you. Even if we didn't all get to spend more time with you on the show. So just thank you for being so generous with your stories and with your time. It really means so much to me.
That's awesome.
You can access us anytime, Michael. Thanks.
Yeah.
Well, we'll have to have you on next season, you know, because what we do is we break down all the episodes with past contestants so you can give your thoughts on all the builders of tomorrow. So cool. we'll have to have you back for that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Reversing the roles with the challenged versus the challenger.
For sure. Well, thank you again. It really means the world.
Thanks.
Thanks, Michael.
Thanks, Michael. Bye-bye.
It was so great getting to sit down with Poppy and Ben. This is definitely the grandpa-grandson dynamic that I think we all dreamed we had. And while the schedule's been a little wonky, I'm still going to be bringing you some more deep dives soon. So be sure to stay subscribed to make sure you don't miss out on all that. And while you're at it, if you've made it this far, be sure to leave the podcast a rating and review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you're listening to this. So if you want to follow along with the podcast, be sure to subscribe on whatever podcast platform you're listening to it now. If you want even more Lego content, be sure to check out my YouTube channel, Talk Bricks, where I cover the Lego news for the week every Saturday. And you can follow the channel on all social media platforms with the username @TalkBricks. And if you want to follow the podcast on Instagram and Facebook, it's Talk Bricks Masters. And on Twitter, it's TB Masters. Thanks again, and I'll see you guys next time.